Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Maggie Locascio. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Sylvia Locascio was born on July 4, 1950, in Cuba. She went by the name Maggie. She moved to the United States and attended the University of Florida, where she studied accounting. In 1972, Maggie met another accounting student named Edward Locascio, and the couple became romantically involved. Edward went by the name Ed. The couple married in 1973 and both had careers in accounting. In 1982, Maggie had a son named Edward Jr., who went by the name Eddie. After this, she stayed home to take care of him. Maggie's husband continued to work and found incredible success. Eventually, the family had a net worth of $6 million. In 1992, they purchased a 3,600-square-foot four-bedroom house at 2806 Granada Boulevard in Coral Gables. The house cost $360,000. Over the years, Maggie and Ed fought a lot about their son, Eddie. Ed wished that his son was more interested in athletic endeavors, but Eddie was an intellectual, an extremely intelligent young man who dedicated his efforts to academic pursuits. Eddie was admitted into medical school at the age of 19. The tension in the family was very high. Eddie did not even refer to his father as Dad, instead calling him Ed. This conflict wasn't enough to bring an end to the marriage, but then Maggie discovered that her husband, Ed, was having an affair. She was ready for their 28-year marriage to conclude. In June 2001, Maggie filed for divorce. Ed moved out of the house on Granada Boulevard and into a condominium in South Beach. The couple's son, Eddie, remained in the family house with his mother. Maggie was afraid of her husband, Ed. Right before she filed for divorce, Ed told Maggie, quote, "I will kill you, I will end you, and I will destroy you," unquote. In response, she changed the code for the alarm system in her house and would reactivate the alarm immediately upon entering the house. By August 2001, Maggie's lawyer discovered that her husband, Ed, had hidden over $3 million in shell corporations. In mid-October 2001, Edward was held in contempt for failing to comply with court orders, including subpoenas ordering him to produce financial documents. Also, Maggie obtained a domestic violence restraining order against Ed. The couple was scheduled to appear in court on October 31, 2001, Halloween. Ed was worried that this was going to be a very frightening day for him. He was about to lose a lot more money in the divorce than he expected. Perhaps Ed wished that Maggie would transform into a ghost. Before moving to the timeline of the crime, let's hear a word from today's sponsor, Hungry Root. Busy times have a way of sneaking up, bringing with them work deadlines, home projects, and the usual chaos. With so much going on, I don't have time for long grocery trips or complicated meals. That's why I use Hungry Root. It makes it easy to keep my kitchen stocked and put together healthy and delicious meals without missing a beat. Hungry Root offers high-quality food without the stress of planning or shopping. You just set your goals and preferences, and they will fill your cart with personalized picks that get smarter over time. Most meals come together in 15 minutes or less, with tons of options for different diets, everything from smoothies and snacks to salad kits and ready-to-eat meals. Plus, their food is free of artificial sweeteners, preservatives, or high fructose corn syrup. One thing I really like about Hungry Root is how it helps me to discover novel foods. My favorite part of Hungry Root is how I can spend less time planning, shopping, and cooking, and more time enjoying healthy food. Take advantage of this exclusive offer. For a limited time, get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. Click the link below or go to hungryroot.com and use code Dr. Grande. That's 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life at hungryroot.com with code Dr. Grande. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On October 30, 2001, one day before Maggie and Ed were scheduled to appear in court, the police responded to an alarm at Maggie's house on Granada Boulevard at about 9:30 p.m. When the police entered the house, they found Maggie's body right inside the door to the garage. She had been beaten, stabbed, strangled, and stomped on. It appeared as though someone attacked her right after she parked her car in the garage and walked into the house. Next to her body was a heavy metal baton, which had been used to strike her with so much force, it bent. The police collected DNA and other evidence at the scene and sent it to a lab for testing. They learned that two witnesses, one of them a police officer, spotted a white pickup truck with a cap 2 blocks from Maggie's house around the time of her murder. Maggie's husband, Ed, was an obvious suspect. The police interviewed him. He denied any involvement in the murder, saying he was at home in his condominium. As it turns out, Ed was correct. Video surveillance and cell phone records showed that he was in his condominium at the time his wife was killed. The police asked Ed who he thought the killer was. He pointed the finger at his son, Eddie. The police interviewed Eddie. He said that he had been studying at the University of Miami on the night of the murder. The police were able to confirm his alibi. Eddie pointed the finger at his father, Ed. He believed that Ed had murdered his mother. So here the police had a father and son accusing each other, but both of them had alibis. 2 days after the murder, the police caught a break in the case. One of Maggie's neighbors found a beige shirt and a gym bag in her yard. This neighbor lived 2 blocks away from Maggie, right where the white pickup truck had been spotted on the night of the murder. Inside the gym bag, there were several items, including a bent knife, rubber gloves, a cloth baton holder, which matched the baton found at the crime scene, credit cards and identification belonging to Maggie, a water bottle, and a blue shirt. Investigators sent these items out for testing. At around this time, the police took an interest in Ed's brother, Michael, as a possible suspect. He lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. Michael had a criminal record and was unemployed. He had been captured on video at Ed's condominium repeatedly ringing the doorbell at 11:41 p.m. on the night of the murder. This was about 2 hours after Maggie was killed. The police found it curious that Ed and Michael did not normally have a lot of contact with each other, maybe seeing each other about once a year. However, from August through October 2001, they had spoken on the phone 39 times. Investigators paid a visit to Michael in North Carolina. He told them that he drove down to Miami on October 30, 2001, to see what his brother Ed was up to. He didn't get to see his brother. Rather, he went to a bar near Ed's condominium in South Beach, where he stayed from 8 p.m. to midnight. Employees at the bar told the police that Michael did not arrive at 8 p.m. He arrived at midnight. He was lying about his alibi. The police learned that Michael had a white pickup truck with a cap. When they examined the truck, they found that the interior had been ripped out. This was more than a little suspicious. Later, the laboratory completed the analysis of the evidence collected by investigators. DNA from the baton found in Maggie's house and from the beige shirt and rubber gloves found by her neighbor matched Ed's brother, Michael. The police arrested Michael and charged him with murder. During an interview, Michael acted as if he was mentally ill. He did not provide the police any useful information. By this time, investigators had developed a theory of the crime. They believed that Michael drove from Charlotte, North Carolina to Coral Gables, Florida on October 30, 2001. He parked his white pickup truck 2 blocks away from Maggie's house, walked to her house, and waited for her to come home. When Maggie opened the garage and pulled her Mercedes in, Michael snuck in before the garage door closed and brutally murdered her right after she stepped into the house. What Michael didn't realize is that Maggie had rearmed the alarm after entering. This is something that she always did because she was afraid of her husband, Ed. When Michael left the house, he triggered the alarm. The DNA evidence against Michael helped investigators put together a strong case against him, but they believed that Ed was the mastermind of the murder. It seemed obvious that Ed must have hired Michael to carry out Maggie's homicide. Building a case against Ed was challenging. He had a strong motive, but there was no proof that he hired his brother Michael. For example, no money changed hands between the brothers. The police kept monitoring Ed, hoping that he would make some kind of mistake that would give them just enough additional evidence to push this case over the edge. This happened in 2005 when Ed was having an argument with his girlfriend. He told her that she would end up just like his wife. On October 21 of that year, Ed was arrested and charged with murder. His brother Michael went to trial first. The trial started in February 2006. In March, Michael was found guilty of murder and sentenced to a term of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Ed's trial started in February 2007. On April 13 of that year, he was found guilty of first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, burglary, and robbery. On March 21, 2007, Ed Locascio was sentenced to 3 terms of life in prison without the possibility of parole. As it turns out, he would only end up serving one. Ed died on August 30, 2018. Maggie's son Eddie became a physician. He never returned to the house on Granada Boulevard. It was listed for sale a few times over the years. Buyers may have been a little bit reluctant, mostly because of the murder part. The house finally sold for $1.1 million in 2016. In 2023, the house sold again, this time for $3 million. In this market, even a murder house appreciates at a frightening rate.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Now moving to my analysis. Ed Locascio always maintained his innocence. His defense argued that his brother Michael was trying to win favor with Ed and, in a misguided effort, decided to kill Maggie on his own. Ed had nothing to do with it. He didn't know what his brother was up to. The state, of course, disagrees. They believe that Ed must have hired Michael to carry out the murder. This brings me to the question, was Ed guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Ed had a contentious relationship with Maggie. They fought over how Ed treated their son. In 1999, Ed threw a statue at his wife. Right before she filed for divorce in 2001, he threatened to kill her. The couple was in the middle of a heated divorce when Maggie's lawyer figured out that Ed was hiding millions of dollars. One day before Maggie and Ed were scheduled to appear in court, Ed's brother Michael murdered Maggie. Why would Michael have killed Maggie if Ed was not involved? Right after the murder, Michael went to Ed's condominium. Among the people interviewed by the police were Ed and his office manager. After the interviews, Ed was in a restaurant with her. He wanted to know what kind of questions the police had asked her. The office manager mentioned that the police were looking for a white pickup truck. Ed told her that his brother drove a Honda. The office manager never mentioned Ed's brother. Why did Ed bring him up? Later, when Ed realized the office manager had been communicating with the police, he became furious with her. He reached out his hands as if he intended to strangle her. This is consistent with Ed having an anger problem. In the gym bag that was recovered 2 blocks from Maggie's house, there was a water bottle from a cross-country team that Ed coached. This makes it seem like Ed supplied the gym bag to his brother Michael. After Ed was arrested, his older brother came down to the police station to talk to him. This is a different brother, not Michael. The police video recorded the conversation. Ed expressed confidence that he would never be convicted, telling his older brother, "They got nothing, never will." Now moving to the exculpatory factors, the police could not find any evidence that money was exchanged between Ed and Michael. It is technically possible that Michael acted on his own when he killed Maggie. He knew that Ed would be better off financially with Maggie dead, so he killed her to win favor with his brother. That's pretty much it for the exculpatory factors. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Ed Locascio was guilty of murder? Yes, I believe he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Ed Locascio was self-centered, immature, impulsive, arrogant, grandiose, overconfident, greedy, manipulative, deceptive, sensation-seeking, angry, aggressive, violent, sadistic, petty, cold, callous, had a sense of entitlement, and was exceedingly creepy. Initially, when Ed was caught cheating, he had no problem moving forward with a non-homicidal divorce. He felt confident that he could conceal millions of dollars from the court. Therefore, the financial damage from the divorce wouldn't be that bad. His feelings changed after Maggie's attorney discovered the hidden money. Faced with losing half his fortune, Ed reached out to his brother Michael for help. He thought of Michael as an aimless loser who would be willing to commit murder out of a distorted sense of loyalty and to prove his worth. Ed was correct. Michael was more than happy to enter a conspiracy. Michael went to Maggie's house and attacked her. She fought back, which made the murder harder than Michael expected. Out of fear, Michael threw the gym bag, which contained inculpatory evidence, including the knife, into some bushes. This was a bad move for him and for his brother Ed. Again, that gym bag contained a water bottle that could be connected to Ed. Despite the murder not going exactly as planned, Ed was confident he would never be caught. This confidence was maintained even after Michael was arrested. Michael was offered a deal to turn on his brother, but he never did. This demonstration of loyalty served to put Ed at ease. When the police arrested Ed, he may have been surprised, but he did not panic. He also retained his composure when his brother Michael was convicted of Maggie's murder. Nothing was going Ed's way, but he refused to believe he could ever be convicted. From Ed's point of view, society had obtained justice for Maggie by convicting his brother Michael. Who was to say that Ed had anything to do with it? Why would anyone believe that Ed was involved? Ed continued to believe he would escape justice. During his trial, Ed would often smile, laugh, and otherwise put on a face that was described as smug and arrogant. His expressions communicated his belief that he was smarter than anyone else, a criminal mastermind. When he was convicted of murdering Maggie, Ed was in shock. This was an outcome he never could have imagined. His involvement was obvious to everyone in society except for him. Ed's arrogance and lack of insight prevented him from seeing himself as others perceived him. In the end, Ed became the centerpiece of a chilling Halloween tale, one whispered each year, not about ghosts or goblins, but about something far more terrifying, a greedy accountant who thought he was untouchable. Those are my thoughts on the case of Maggie Locascio. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.